Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 401. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 243, Lost and Found. And Catherine pointed out at the beginning, Bree Williams is now a regular writer on the show. And it's no surprise that this episode was like a delightfully weird list of things, because that's what Bree Williams does really well.
Yeah, this is my favorite kind of episode. Just lots of little random weirdness.
Yes.
But it starts out with Cecil. He's talking a little bit about the fact that he is still the acting station management, which means he has to do everything, like order coffee and make sure human resources is dealing with everything, you know, correctly. And that would freak me the heck out if suddenly I was responsible for everything. I think I've had dreams about that sort of thing, where it's suddenly all on me.
Yeah. But he's sort of making decisions about content, and they've had a ton of Lost and Found requests come through ever since, like, I think we've had in the last two episodes, we've had Lost and Found.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cecil's like, hell with it. We're just going to have an entire episode of Lost and Found.
And we start out with those Florida keys. And I just love the fact that this has been a recurring problem. So Sri Lanka was perfectly happy to ship the Florida keys back to Florida, but Big Dan's Logistics and Slightly Stale Bread was the company responsible for shipping, and they messed up, and they accidentally sent it to some part in the north of England, I think, and they're not giving it back because, you know, they've got tropical isles all of a sudden to their own. No, they're not going to give those up. And Cecil said, but it'll be okay. I'm sure England isn't the kind of country that would start a war with somebody over someone else's continent. It'll be fine.
Oh, God.
Bit on the nose there.
Just a tad. So we go from there into the most recent headlines. So there's going to be a gala thrown in benefit of Grove Park. They're going to try and restore Grove Park to its original state, which is apparently dirt. Just lots of dirt. No trees, no benches, no nothing. That's what they're going to do with it.
And the opposition party is protesting because they happen to like trees, but the woman who's in charge of the Grove Park initiative is too busy shopping for socks at Kohl's, so she's just not going to deal with them right now. They can come to her office, and then she will be happy to ignore them there as well.
Exactly. Okay, so back to the Lost and Found. I don't know if we want to go through every single one of these items, but we can certainly list some of the ones that we liked best. I like the one, it was lost. A baby last seen transforming into a toddler. They describe all that. Lost, a toddler, next transforming into a girl. And it just goes all the way, you know, from a girl, a bigger girl, a teen, an adult woman, just losing who they were before they transformed into the current state that they're in.
Yeah, and it's Bernard Sampson who would like anyone to contact him if they found any of those items, because he just wants to understand. And it was a little bit bittersweet, but also kind of heartwarming, because it was like, you know, lost baby and, you know, like, can make you laugh. And then, you know, a teenager can make you laugh at the same time that they make you really irritated. And just all these wonderful things about the person that they're turning into, but then they get lost when they turn into somebody else. So that was nice. But then found dog, if it's yours, please provide us with the last four digits of the serial number. I think there was a song that had also been lost that had been sung one time by somebody and then never again, and they completely forgot it. Let me see, what was one of my favorite ones? Oh, I like this. Found, sense of purpose, and no guarantees whether it's going to be a worthy sense of purpose.
Nope. I liked found, $409 in a plain paper bag. I'm not going to give it back to you. I just thought you needed to know. And I'm like, I think that's fair.
Yeah. And lost, hat, do not approach.
So we go from there to our sponsors, which is Bisquick. And it's basically a whole list of, you know, when all people are gone, when the buildings have all crumbled into dirt, when everything is at a complete end and the sun doesn't shine anymore, when that's all that there is. And Cecil's voice was getting progressively more echoey as this went on, but it said, when you get to the final moments, this will be the time of Bisquick. Await us.
I don't know about anybody else, but when I think of Bisquick, I have to think about being a starving college student and that being like one of the things that you were guaranteed to be able to buy in a store for cheap and just live off of that.
Yep. Okay, so we had the children's puzzle section. It was like a lot of, like, I don't know, puzzles that are usually done on paper, but Cecil's saying them out loud, so it's about as goofy as you can imagine.
Well, yeah, but then there was a fun children's comic and with a little caption and everything, and it was a little boy walking with his grandpa, only the little boy has a boat, and it's filled with blood, and the grandfather is turning away because he doesn't want to acknowledge how horrible this is, and the boy knows that he's an awful person and that he's going to grow up to be a horrendously evil human being. And I think the little caption was, "My boat has a boo-boo."
God, that was creepy.
Yeah.
Lost any sense of perspective. It's this whole idea of being able to tell the difference between when something's a minor inconvenience and when something's an absolute crisis.
Yes. Well, we know Mom doesn't listen to this podcast, but yeah, that could possibly be something that we could make use of if someone would help us find it.
Oh, God. Ooh, found orb.
Yes. If you found it, you can email orb with the subject line orb. Here's another one. Lost spacecraft, lost in 1947. If found, don't be weird about it. We think you kind of are the type to be weird about it.
One of my favorites. Lost hat. Do not approach. It has teeth.
And there was, I think, a day in 2018 that was rather sweet. Just the whole how chill it was to just be able to wake up and you didn't have a hangover, because it wasn't that type of year to have hangovers, and everything was nice and you had fun. And then things kind of got bad in the latter half of the year. I'm like, 2018. Oh, God. Leading into 2019, we know what happens then.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And we'll have more of that right after the weather.
I loved the weather this time. Now, full disclosure, we usually listen to Welcome to Night Vale at 1.25 speed on YouTube, just so we can listen to it quickly. But we had to stop and, like, rewind and then set it at normal so we could listen to the song the way it was meant to be played, because it was just fun.
It was. It was called Old Radio by Robbie Hecht, and I wrote down modern top 40 rock, and I don't mean that as an insult. I like top 40 music, and I know there's people listening who do as well. It's not an insult to say it sounded like that, but it also had a little bit of folk in it as well.
Yeah, I just have little notes. I like the drum beat and the vocals and the intricate guitar in the background, and how things felt a little bit sort of echoey in the very background of the vocals. Yeah, I'll have to add that to my playlist.
Yeah, it's nice. And then we have the final one of the episode, Lost, and it's basically Sarah, and the Sarah that existed on this one night, and it was the last night she'd existed like that, and it was talking about how she and her friend were so close, and not necessarily romantically, but just very entwined, and then her friend got a job someplace very far away.
And they promised that they would be able to hang out on Zoom and on phone calls and everything, and it would be fine, but just life kept getting in the way, and then suddenly it's 2 years, and they haven't talked to each other in all that time, and when they do see each other again, it's really not the same. So if you find Sarah, the Sarah that I saw in the mirror, please let me know, because I would like to have her back. I would like to be her again. And I just thought, aw, that whole thing we heard ages ago, the friendships have a lifespan kind of thing. Like, sometimes it just happens. It doesn't have to be a big blowout or anything. Just, you know, sometimes you sort of drift apart and it's sad. Yeah. And it would be nice to get back to that point, not just have your friend back, but be the person you were when you were their friend.
Yeah. And they finished it up with, also, I found a hat. Can someone get it out of my house? It seems hungry.
Perfect touch.
Yes. And that was it. It was the end of the episode. Just a delightful list of weird things.
Yes. So the things that I wanted to talk about now is, we've got one more week as of time of this recording before the Oscars. And you and I have actually watched two of the feature-length animated nominees.
Yes.
Now, the first one that we watched was Elemental. And I did think that was really delightful. I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, all the effects you can get when you have earth and air and fire and water and their people and the music, you know.
Oh, the music's great.
Thomas Newman just knocking it out of the park, doing such a fantastic job with all of it. And the storyline was maybe a tiny bit predictable, but at the same time not. And it just all, it was all just so much fun. And then Elizabeth told me about the movie Nimona was available on YouTube, but I should probably watch it soon because it might not be there for long. And then I watched it, and the next day it had been pulled. So the timing was great on that. But my God, I don't know if Nimona can beat Elemental, but I liked Nimona more.
I did. There was something about that style of animation. Everybody's expressions. It was a really, like, very funny in places. This was a really super funny animation, but it also had a very, very serious message. I mean, spoilers, Nimona is a shape changer, and it's actually talking very, very subtly about the trans experience and how...
Or even the queer experience.
Yeah, exactly. And how it's like the question kind of got put in there at one point. It was kind of like, basically, why can't you just act like everybody else acts? And the Nimona, the character, talking kind of about how she might not die if she couldn't change the way she wanted to, but it certainly wouldn't be living. And I thought, oh, that's really neat.
And even if you don't want to follow that particular theme, the story itself is just fun and compelling and tragic and just so powerful. And I got to say it again, funny. Just, yeah. I mean, she transforms into an otter at one point, and she's like in the middle of this battle, and she's knocked this person down who has a cast. And for some reason, and that whole thing, she was like, oh, I'm not a doctor, but this cast looks delicious, and then chaws down into the cast. I had to keep rewinding that and watch it again. It was so funny, and I couldn't tell you why.
Oh, it's hilarious. And I like the design of the whole thing. Now, I had seen, before I started watching this, and by the way, when we say it was on YouTube, the official Netflix account for 1 week put it up for free, and that was... I mean, I keep talking about how I would like to watch as many of the Oscar-nominated films as possible, but some of them, they're not available for streaming, and they're not available in the theater. And Netflix, it's like they gave them the chance to be like, hey, this is up for an Oscar. Maybe you should watch it. Here it is for free. And I thought, that's not like the usual Netflix that we know and get slightly disgusted with.
Nope. And Netflix actually came out looking really good in this whole thing because I think Disney bought the company that was making this and then shuttered it, which meant that the movie wasn't going to get released. And then Netflix stepped up to the plate and said, no, we're going to take over this.
That's great.
And then they're responsible for this coming out, and everybody seems super happy.
Yeah. I think Annapurna, I'll have to look that up. Another studio was also responsible as well for picking it up where the old studio left off. So I'm hoping that everybody involved is just really proud of themselves because it's so cool. And like I was saying, the design on this thing, I had seen maybe a poster here and there, and I just had this idea that it was a fantasy story, you know, dragons, knights, and everything. From what I saw, that looked like what it is. And it is that, except for the fact that it takes place almost 1,000 years in the future. It's a sci-fi story, but it actually has like an aesthetic of knights and castles and dragons. It's so cool.
Just the first few minutes of the movie had surprises in it that really knocked me back a little bit. Like, there was that, you know, you have the whole storytelling thing with a picture book talking about Glorith, the first hero who drove away the monsters from the city. And then you see the little tagline, 1,000 years later, and you go, oh, all right, I wasn't expecting that. But then you had, you know, there's going to be a ceremony where a lot of people are going to get knighted, including Ballister, who is actually a commoner that the queen has arranged for him to be able to be knighted against all tradition. And then you have Ambrosia, I think, who is this star knight-to-be who everybody loves, and he's so cocky and so popular and everything. And then it turns out he is Bal's best friend, and in fact, the two of them are really kind of in love with each other. And I thought, whoa, I wasn't expecting he was going to be a nice guy.
Yeah, especially when his name, they introduce him in the very beginning, and I immediately thought this is going to be the guy who's going to make Ballister's life completely horrible. And his last name is Goldenloin, which I was like, wow, that's kind of on the nose there. But yeah, just instantly, I thought when he came to go talk to Ballister before the ceremony, I thought, oh, they're friends. And then they're holding hands. I'm like, oh my God, they're boyfriends. That's amazing. And that wasn't even something, I don't believe that they were hiding from anyone, because the story didn't establish it as being like, being gay is wrong. I think that's just that was just a part of the story that everybody accepted, which I think Hannah usually calls that built-in inclusivity, where you have gay characters, but that's not the point of the character. They just happen to be gay, and they are a part of the story, and that makes it more just normalize people being gay and also being other things as well. You don't have to make it like, oh, their terrible, tragic journey and, you know, bury your gays and all that kind of stuff. No, they were just boyfriends.
Yeah. And it was, I hope we see more of this sort of thing, because I think that's what it's going to take before people start talking about woke stuff. Because anytime you include someone who's gay, someone says, oh, you're being woke. And it's like, well, what if it's just normal? What if it's just the characters? There happens to be these characters and those characters, and some of them are stamp collectors, and some of them have a boyfriend. And it's just, you know, it's all normal.
Yeah, yeah. It was a really, I mean, and the whole thing about being a trans experience, they're trusting the audience to figure that out. Nobody's like trying to hit you over the head with it. This character is just talking about, in order to be who she really wants to be, she knows that society doesn't accept her, but she can't not be who she actually is. And it was really, like you said, beautiful and lovely and a little tragic sometimes.
Yeah, and just really, I mean, it actually has a mention of like a suicide attempt at one point, and they're not shying away from it about exactly how traumatized a person would have to be to consider that as the only option. And it's just, oh, I really hope they get it. I mean, Elemental was a stunning looking movie and just fun as well, but this was levels and levels above.
Yeah, and it means that we've really got a couple more, so we have to watch Across the Spider-Verse.
We do.
We have to, because I've been hearing that that's the one that's very likely to get it.
You think? Really?
So,
oh, wow. Because I would have thought it would be a Pixar would run away with it as usual.
You know, sometimes Pixar does. The problem was is that Elemental was not successful. And I think it might have been, I don't know if it had a theatrical release. I've been hearing from some people who are saying that it was terribly marketed and that nobody knew what to do with it. So it really didn't succeed. And that doesn't make a difference as to whether or not it succeeded monetarily. Doesn't make any kind of difference as to how beautiful it was and how well made it was. But I wonder sometimes if that's going to affect the votes, that it just didn't,
do
well.
Or the fact that Pixar sometimes does really well and gets the Oscar win because it's a runaway success and that everybody adored it.
Yeah. So remains to be seen. But yeah, we have to see Spider-Verse at some point in the next 6 days. Oh my goodness.
God, is it that close? Jeez.
Now, I also did want to mention, I finally watched Oppenheimer last night.
Oh, and, wow.
Ooh, boy, yeah. Oh, my goodness. That was powerful. Jeez. And Cillian Murphy, man, does he do a good job.
He really does. Now, I kept getting confused about where we were in time.
Yes.
Because it's a whole bunch of basically, you know, men in suits talking to each other. And it was hard to tell. It's like, all right, is this 10 years in the future? Is this a flashback to the past? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, now the explosion scene, that was what I talked about, where you lost all the sound completely. That was quite a thing, I thought.
Very impressively done. They just really sold the tension leading up to that moment, because they weren't sure if the weather was going to hold. They weren't sure if everything was going to work. Oh my God, the fact that they were doing calculations early on, the idea that this bomb would create a cascading reaction and that's why it would be so powerful. But there was some worry at the beginning that it might start a cascade reaction that doesn't stop and actually destroys the world. And I went, oh dear Lord, were we close to that? Holy shit.
I don't know. I wonder if anyone's gone back and crunched the numbers to find out if humanity at that stage could have conceivably created something that would do that. I mean, it's a pretty big place and there's an awful lot of atmosphere. So the idea that one explosion could possibly keep cascading that far, I don't know. But yeah, it's still the fact that they had to consider that is pretty amazing. But now, what did you think of the scene with his wife when she was having to give her deposition?
Oh my goodness, it was so good, because she was sitting there and she's a very angry woman, but she is, you know, finding out about her husband's infidelities right and left. And you think for a minute that she's being browbeaten by these people, and it's like a, I don't know.
It's kangaroo like a court, I think.
Yeah, yeah. They were definitely wanting to make sure that Oppenheimer didn't get his security clearance renewed. And they were just stacking the deck against him in every way possible, and she's giving her deposition, and you really think that they are going to browbeat her into silence, and she's so quiet, and she's so just tragic, and then she just flips it around and just rips strips off of them right and left. It was amazing.
It was so satisfying to watch that because, yeah, I was expecting the worst. I was expecting her to end the whole thing like shaking and in tears afterwards. So when she starts smiling at the guy, I was like, oh, wow, she's going to take him on.
Oh, man, because I thought it was going to be one of those because she'd been really browbeating Oppenheimer to defend himself more, to not be such a gentleman and everything. And I thought what the lesson that the scene was going to teach us is, it's one thing to say that yourself, but it's really hard to pull off when you're actually in the moment. Oh, no, she knew what she was doing.
Now, I have seen a few people complain about the scene in the hotel with Florence Pugh and Cillian Murphy, where they're sitting in chairs.
Oh, yeah.
And some people have like used that as an example of the most unnecessary nude scene in a movie ever. And Nathan said afterwards, that was the least erotic nudity I've ever seen. And I don't know how they managed that, if that was on purpose. Because, of course, they both like got their legs, you know, folded over or whatever. So it's not like they're showing off everything, but it's like there's no sexual tension whatsoever between them. It was really kind of surprising.
It was surprising. I really liked her character, though. She was deeply, deeply, deeply troubled. And she's on that scale where it's like, how attractive are you when you're crying from Tobey Maguire all the way up to Tom Hiddleston? Mm-hmm. She's definitely on the Tom Hiddleston end.
Yeah, I would say so as well. She manages that. Of course, you know, her first really big role was Midsommar, and she had to do a lot of crying in that one, so she probably learned some techniques there.
Yeah, I just watched her episode. I've been watching a lot of episodes of Hot Ones lately, the show where people eat progressively hotter wings while they're being interviewed, and it is actually really entertaining, and you can go through the back catalog they've got on YouTube. You can find just about anybody that you like, and she has an episode, and I thought she did very well.
Now, how did she react to the wings?
The interesting thing is, you go all the way, it's like from 1 to 10, and I believe number 8, that spice. They're rating everything on the Scoville level of hotness. Mm-hmm. So this one is always in the number 8 position, and it is not the hottest one out of everything, but it's called Da Bomb, and it just kills everybody. There is something about it, even though Scoville level, it's not as high as the next two that come after it, and everybody has the same reaction. Whether they've been doing good, whether they've been doing bad, they get to that one, they're like, Jesus Christ! So yeah, I can't remember if it was her or someone else who said, she's like, oh God, this is the worst ever, and I've had children, you know?
Because I remember reading the trivia about the Hawkeye series, where, you know, the character she was playing was talking with Haley Steinfeld's character, and they're eating mac and cheese. She's like, you going to finish that? Can I put some hot sauce on it? And she shakes hot sauce over it. Apparently, that was Florence Pugh, like, committing to the bit and putting real hot sauce on her mac and cheese. So I figured she's probably a little tougher than I am.
Yeah, she even mentioned that story because the bottle was there, but it was just part of the props in the scenes. And so she asked the prop guy, she's like, is that real? They're like, yeah, it's real. She's like, good. And she poured it on there and everything. She was just really, really good. And her scenes of crying were just broke your heart, you know? Boy, she and Cillian Murphy are a couple pretty people to be on screen together.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where they're like, they're both going into a relationship with their eyes wide open so that when he tells her that he's getting married and he won't be able to see her very often, and she understands, but she's still sad. And it's like, I like that combination that, you know, she absolutely, you know, knows how the world works and she's not going to rip into him for that, but she's also sad about it because she likes him. And I thought, oh, man. Yeah.
Another character that I like that surprised the heck out of me. All right, obviously, spoilers, if you haven't seen the movie yet and are planning to, you can just skip forward a little bit. It was a confirmation hearing for Strauss, I guess his name was. It's Robert Downey Jr.'s character. They're trying to confirm him for the cabinet. And they're calling in all these different witnesses and everything. And one person comes in and sits down, and you see him, and it's Rami Malek, who was in one of the main characters in the Mr. Robot show. And he had been kind of an underling to one of the generals for a while. So to see him show up again and sit down and be prepared to give his deposition for this cabinet hearing, and they're thinking that he was going to be on Robert Downey Jr.'s side, but he's not. And that was a satisfying scene. It really, really was.
Yes, I thought so as well, because I was waiting for Robert Downey Jr.'s character to get his comeuppance and, oh, does he ever.
My goodness. Oh, man. And it's there's so many big names in the movie. I mean, you got Matt Damon's in the movie, Emily Blunt, Florence Pugh, Robert Downey Jr., and then a ton of these, oh, hey, it's that guy. I mean, you kept on catching sight of certain people in certain roles and being like, oh, my God, it's the guy who played the mayor in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I was like, holy cow.
Now, one of them drove me absolutely crazy. It was the little toady guy who was, like, always trying to undercut Cillian Murphy's character the whole time. Yeah. And I was like, where have I seen him? Oh, my God, it's driving me crazy. And I finally looked it up. We finished up. It's Dane DeHaan. He was the main character in Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. So I was like, holy crap! Okay.
Goodness.
I turned to Nathan and I said, oh my God, he was the main character in Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. He was dreadful.
Oh God, yeah, he was not good.
He was miscast, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I'm so glad that he got to be in a better movie. Wow.
Yeah, me too!
So, I gotta tell you, I haven't watched Barbie yet. In fact, as of time of this recording, all I've seen is Oppenheimer and Poor Things as for the Best Pick nominations. Mm-hmm. Oppenheimer is brilliant. It is too long. You're right. It needed about 15 minutes chopped here and there. I don't know of an entire scene that could go, but I felt some of them we could have possibly moved it on a little bit, I suppose. I have to say Poor Things is the more compelling movie, but it's a very divisive movie. A lot of people just hated it. So
yeah.
I don't know. I honestly would vote right now for Poor Things over Oppenheimer. I'm sorry if I've insulted anybody with that, but I just found it. It's just so bizarre, and I really, it's very intriguing, you know?
Well, now I have to watch that, because, I mean, I always thought that it was going to be Oppenheimer's to lose, basically, just because of the subject matter, and Cillian Murphy, and, you know, over three hours long, and all that, you know, sort of seems Oscar. But, yeah, if you think Poor Things was the better movie, or more compelling movie.
That's a good question. I mean, I know if I had to pick between the two, I like Poor Things better, even though it is so deeply weird and upsetting in places, but I would go back and I would watch Poor Things again because it is fascinating. I think having seen Oppenheimer, I think I'm good. I don't need to watch it again. You know,
no, I don't actually. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no. The experience of watching it the first time, I think, is enough.
Yeah. So I don't know. Right now my bet's on Poor Things, but I am hoping to watch Barbie before next Sunday because I did see a ad for it on the Redbox in my grocery store. So
maybe
I'll actually like rent a Redbox. I haven't done that in like 6 or 7 years. So
no,
maybe
I haven't either, actually. I'm not sure why I stopped doing that. For a while, that was kind of my go-to thing, was to look up Redbox nearby and see what I could actually rent.
I think it's probably because isn't it like, Is it a $5 rental? What's Redbox up to nowadays? We don't know. We could have looked this up, but who knows?
I have no idea.
Well, I was able to get Oppenheimer on Amazon for $5. So
yeah.
If Redbox can't do better than that, I mean, hey, I don't have to actually leave my apartment. So that may be why we stopped doing that. There's a lot of stuff that you can watch if you just have a streaming membership, and the stuff that you rent is not that expensive most of the time, so that's probably why I stopped.
Yeah, but I can see myself doing that a little bit more now that Amazon Prime is doing that fucking ads thing.
Oh God,
you know, limited ads. We watched the last episode of the Grand Tour, which is what the Top Gear guys moved on to, and it's with limited ads, and like multiple times during it, you know, clicks onto the ads. You have to sit there for like 3 of them, and it's just it's irritating. It should be one or the other. If you're paying for the service, you shouldn't have ads because you're already paying.
Right. And I will say that having rented Oppenheimer, they did not break into ads with that one. So that's the one good thing, is if you have paid the rental fee, then you're not going to have to do ads.
I was wondering that, because that would definitely cure me of wanting to rent anything through Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
If in addition to paying for Prime and then paying for the rental, you also had to have ads? Hell no.
No. The only other thing I wanted to mention is at some point this week, I will have a post with all of the Oscar-nominated documentary shorts, because I watched all of them. I managed to find them in one place or another, and I'm going to say it's one, I can't remember the actual Asian names, but the English version is called Grandma and Grandma. Out of all of them, I liked that one the best. I hear that The Last Repair Shop is probably shortlisted to be the winner, and that was actually created by the LA Times. I just felt That one was very well done, and it's a very interesting story. I thought the audio was way overproduced.
Really?
Well, you know how, if you edit podcasts, you know that sometimes the temptation is to cut it really super tight, where there's no pauses, there's no ums, there's no ahs, no nothing. If you do that too much, you can hear every single cut, and they were doing that in this one, and I was like, it's distracting. You have to let the words breathe just a little bit. So yeah, it's a very fun one. That's the one I hear is probably going to win, but I would like Grandma and Grandma to get it because I just thought it was sweet. I really liked it. Anyway, that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Catherine and Nathan went to a small convention in North Carolina last week.
We did, yes, a little mini con in Durham. And we just went in and wandered about the sales floor, which is pretty much all that they had, really. And there were a couple of cosplayers wandering around. Really good Mandalorian cosplay. I thought Nathan got a good shot of that one. And I bought a set of underwear that had soot sprites embroidered on it. So it was cute.
Because of course I did.
Yes. Yeah, that adorable. I believe the name of the store was All Test Small Things.
Oh,
spelled pretty much how it's pronounced.
Oh, okay. I like it. And if you go to our Pixelated Geek Instagram account, which is My Pixelated Geek, you will see the photos that Nathan took because he posted them there.
So. Yes.
Be sure to check that out. All that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So next week, we've got Laura Lippis.
Oh, God. This is where things really kick into gear, I think.
Mm-hmm. And we'll probably have some comments about what won the Oscar. I'm not planning on watching the Oscars. How about you?
No, I haven't been able to since the big snafu with the wrong winner getting announced. Oh. I just like that took all the fun out of it for me.
It really did. So what I usually do is I just go on Twitter and click the live update buttons and then respond to, oh, hey, guess who just won? And everything.
It's so. Like if there's something worth seeing, a clip will be shown the next day, so that's fine.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
There's going to be a gala being thrown. Sorry. Very loud car. One moment. And that wasn't... Car?